fifth time in the last six seasons, the Dutch are the champions.
This is Gary O'Neill to win it.
They've got it! Terrific header, Callum Robinson, super ball in.
Great feeling, we have to treasure these nights.
Well, hello there. Welcome along to the RT Soccer Podcast. I'm Adrian Eames, joined by Conor Neville from RT Sport Online, Alan Cawley, RT Pundit, and James O'Toole from Soccer Republic. And our special guest this week joining us from Cork is George O'Callaghan. Hello, George.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Alan, how good was George O'Callaghan?
George O'Callaghan was a good one. I tell you what, over the years, Adrian, some of the boys I played against, George is right up there at the very top. And the best thing about him as well, great lad and a great character, and you need characters in the game, and Georgie was certainly one of them.
Are you liking what you're hearing, Georgie?
Yeah, no, I definitely owe him a pint anyway.
It wouldn't be the first pint to owe me.
Don't even say that about me down in Cork.
James, for people under 25 who wouldn't know George O'Callaghan, describe George O'Callaghan as a player.
George O'Callaghan, if you were obviously not a Cork City fan, was the most frustrating man to watch on a football pitch.
Go on.
He's just so good, it was impossible to get it. Alan obviously got up close and personal watching him as he ghosted past Alan on several occasions, but he just had such a talent with the ball at his feet, could create anything, and he was just, every time you seen his name on the team sheet, you'd be like, ah, here we go again.
Connor, did he ever do damage to Longford Town?
Oh, no doubt, yeah. I mean, a lot of people did damage
on
to
a Saturday
Longford
night.
The Flan Zero.
Alan is after referring to Saturday. I'm sure you didn't go into Longford too often. But back in the mid-noughties, I mean, Longford Town would have had a pretty strong team, of course, around 2005, 2006, when George and John O'Flynn and whatnot were winning the league. I do remember, I think it was Longford Town that you might have played the night Damien Richardson had the famous rant afterwards, wasn't that it? That was definitely Longford Town.
Which rant is that now?
There's a few of those ones.
Yeah, all right.
But yeah, no, definitely. And
the cup final as well. You would have played in that, George, would you, when B scored the header?
2007, yeah.
No, I wasn't there.
He wasn't there. He left.
Yeah. I was at Ipswich then.
Yeah. Playing real football that stage out. Yeah.
Well, we will talk about your career in some detail, George, but I guess we should start with hits and misses. But I'll start with the hit of the week, and George ain't going to want to hear this one. Graham Burke scoring 5 goals for Shamrock Rovers. It's not about the opposition, George, so rest easy there. But scoring 5, Alan. Mm. Sensational.
Unbelievable
stuff,
yeah. Because when the news was coming through, obviously we were in the Brandywell and you're following the scores and hearing, checking out who scored each goal. Then Burke, obviously, he keeps adding to his tally. We were trying to go through the last time someone did score 5, and I can't remember. Like, it was a long time ago now. I'm sure James is going to tell me in a few minutes, but
it was me against Shirley Dynamos in the League Cup.
It's certainly something that doesn't happen very often. So, absolutely brilliant achievement by Graham as well. And I suppose people were all talking, myself included, saying, have they a 20 goal a season man? Well, sure, Graham in one game is actually close to 20 himself. Yeah, so brilliant achievement.
Well, this is the thing, because Junior was the Golden Boot winner last season.
14.
And he's nearly halfway already, there already, Graham.
In fairness, though, if you were a betting company watching some of the goals he scored the other night, you kind of go, because the second goal, he actually walked it in. Nobody tackles him.
Desperate,
nobody was in. It's absolutely desperate. But again, to Graham, he can only do what he has to do. And I think the last person to score 5 goals in a league game was actually one of our quiz questions last week.
Oh, was it?
It was indeed.
Mick Leach, is it?
No, he was the top goal scorer in the first division with 30 goals. He scored the 5 goals.
Oh, I listened to this last week. Yeah, Furlong.
Danny Furlong, yeah, scored 5 goals in the game.
Very good.
Wexford, so.
But in the Premier Division, it
Premier
must be
Division, the only one I can kind of remember was against Sligo, and that was Jonathan Speak.
Speak.
I think I was at that game. It was in 1988.
88,
that's
yeah.
That's one of those where the mind plays tricks. You see it so often on YouTube.
He needed 6 goals to get top goal scorer that day, and he scored, I think he scored 6 or 7.
Got 6.
That day. Yeah, so.
6.
In the Showgrounds?
Yeah.
In the Showgrounds.
Speak was some player.
Yeah, I think Mick Leach got 4 or 5. As well,
yeah, I'm sure Mick probably.
But for Graham, it's a hell of an achievement. I suppose the only thing you'd be worried, well, if there was any worry, the fact that Aaron Green didn't score, and he's your centre forward, and the chance has gone in and out of, obviously signed Rory Gaffney, who I'm sure you're going to touch on, Adrian. So, but brilliant result
for
Shamrock
Rovers. Seeing as you brought it up.
Yeah, well, that's the one criticism, I suppose, if there's any to be thrown at Shamrock Rovers, people saying they haven't got the 20 goal a season man, and we all felt that might catch them out, which it did last year. And again, this year, they obviously, in the off season, they hadn't went out to try and get an out-and-out centre-forward. And to be fair to Aaron Green, he does unbelievable work. And in the cup final, I felt he was their man of the match in terms of the pressing he does and the work rate and the effort and all that stuff. But he's just not clinical. So the fact that they've gone out and got Gaffney, I was even going through some of his goals there this morning, he's not really prolific either. But I feel in that Shamrock Rovers team, with the amount of chances that they create and the domination they have in largely all the games, bar maybe Dundalk, he will get plenty of chances and I think he will do well. So he's a very, very good signing. But he will have to dislodge Green, because Green obviously scored against Bohemians. Again, I go back to that example of the fact that when we always use, I suppose, the line that Green is not clinical, that's your prime example, that they beat Cork 6-0 the other night and he doesn't get a goal. If you were a centre forward in a game where there's a hatful of chances and you didn't score, you'd be a bit kind of saying to yourself, a bit disappointed. So that's where I suppose the criticism comes, that he's not all that prolific. But in terms of all the other work that he does and the link play and all that kind of stuff, Aaron's done really well for Shamrock Rovers.
George, as a Cork City man, it's difficult to ask you about Shamrock Rovers given what happened a few days ago, but the likes of Rory Gaffney joining Shamrock Rovers, is that a game changer for the Hoops in terms of this season? Is that something they've been lacking the last couple of years?
Yeah, I think it is. But like, I suppose when you go through their squad, it's like the quality that they've been building over the last year or two is there. And, you know, when you got Burkett and five goals and bringing Gaffney in, like, you know, they are becoming like one of the big forces again, which they were years and years ago. So I think it's worrying for the other teams. I think when you look at it, you know, basically only Dundalk are the ones that can compete with them. So down here, I think our top goal scorer scored six goals last year and he was our centre-back. So if Burke's getting five in one game, then it's worrying times for us all down in Cork.
George, we're recording this obviously on a Monday afternoon and Cork played Dundalk later this evening. So who knows, it could be a major, major upset. But are you concerned about the start that Cork have made so far?
Well, I went to watch him against Shells and Shells just done a job on him. And Fenny's brought in a few lads over in from England. And you could tell that Shells just sat back. And, you know, the lads he brought in, the centre-back and the right-back, and the whole midfielder, they had time on the ball. So they looked decent for the 90 minutes. They looked like they could do a job. But I did say after the game, I goes, when they go up to Dublin and the big teams like Rovers and Dundalk and Bowes and all these lads come gunning for them, they're going to get the shock of their lives. And I think that's what happened, because I think the lads come over, they think they're going to stroll through the League of Ireland, and that certainly doesn't happen, because the one thing in the League of Ireland, everyone puts in 110% every week. You don't get that time on the ball, and it's culture shock when you go up and play in Dublin compared to Turner's Cross. And I kind of expected it last Friday night, but I certainly didn't expect 6-0. But looking at the goals, you know, some of them were just a shambles, and it's worrying times for Fenny. You can see in his face, you know, he's getting more stressed, and he needs support now more than anything.
What was the feeling like around Turner's Cross last Friday? I know it was a late goal and stuff like that. In fact, Kilduff comes back and scores it as well. It just seemed to be he was quicker to react than anybody in the defence were.
You could tell after 30 minutes, kind of like the atmosphere changed, you know, the whole buzzing against the old days in Cork and Shells, and, you know, the Shed was in full voice. But you could tell after 30 minutes that kind of feeling came in, that they kind of knew what was going to happen. And for the whole second half, like, we didn't have any chances apart from maybe two half-headers, but there was nothing on target. And to be fair, Kilduff came into the game. He basically busted himself, and Shepherd really kind of, like, I don't know where he was last season, but second half against Cork City, he was fantastic. And you know what, you could just sense it. And as you say, they were getting the second balls and the goal as well. It was a header and it bounces and then they're quicker to react. And, you know, it's just so disappointing. And, you know, you like to give a few of them a kick up the backside, like, and get them going. But Fenny just has such a seriously big job in his hands that it is worrying for us down here.
Okay.
Well, it's a bit shocking, really, isn't it? Because, like, a year and a half ago, they were given Club of the Year by the FAI, and a club that we should be all looking up to. But then we see what's happened. Obviously, the Echo did a piece at the weekend about the finances and how the finances have gone. As you said, maybe just people just not putting their hands up within that board.
But you look at it, I think they sold the clause for Maguire for 500,000. And why are Preston giving us 500,000 now? And then they want to come in and buy the club. Surely they do the deal and the whole lot and the whole package put together. So I think that's certainly something that's not going to happen, and a quick fix for Cork City. So like as you say, this time last year we were one of the favourites to win the league. I know this year some people are tipping us for relegation, so
it is such sitting in this room actually.
Yeah, well, to me, George, Cork City have been the story really with Dundalk over the last 4 or 5 years, and they've created that rivalry, and they were the only ones that were able to go toe to toe with them, and without them really Dundalk would have had it all their own way, and then obviously they overtook them and it was great. But you look at how a club can be in such a successful position, and obviously Champions League money and the huge crowds that they get in Turner's Cross, to go to the situation where you're reading in the paper last night in that article in the Echo that they're a half an hour of maybe not getting a licence and going out of business, and that they had to sell on the clauses for Maguire and Brown. Like, it's incredible, really. And like you, I know Fenny really well. He's a friend of mine. I'd love to see him do well, but I think he went into that job totally blind. Yep. Because he never realised how bad things are. And you look at in the off-season, the players that he signed and the market that he's signing players in, Dylan McGlade, Corey Galvin, Connor Davis, unknowns from England, Redmond, Dylan, Okieng. I was one of the ones that tipped him to struggle this year, and I don't take any great pride in that, but that's just purely going on what I'm seeing in terms of the squad that they have. And you look at the start that they've had so far, and as James outlined, the goals that they conceded the other night were just horrendous, and it is going to be a long, long season for them.
Like, I think that's exactly what's going on, Alan, because it's funny, because knowing you're in Cork, you can normally hear what's going on, and you can kind of like sense, like get lads tell you what's going on, you know what I mean, because everyone talks. But it's been really tight-lipped, so no one knows what's going on. And like as you say, if they're panicking and they're selling clauses, like the club needs to come out and clarify the situation, because for me, I worry about Fenny, because like Fenny's in this job, like where does Fenny go if everyone turns on Fenny, like the supporters and all that? Like, it was not fair on Fenny. Joey Gamble's in there. Like, Kearney was a great servant to the club as a player, and especially as a coach. Everyone loved Kearney. Kearney's gone. So like there's massive, massive questions to be answered in the club. And for me, I honestly don't know where they're going to go.
Okay, well, let's spool back to a happier time, shall we? The year 2005.
Thursday afternoon.
2005. Great days, George. Have a listen to this.
George O'Callaghan. O'Callaghan turns, goes towards goal. The shirt outside the shorts. Runs into a roadblock there. They play it across the midfield. Horgan comes out with a loose ball for Cork. Now angles went out wide to Roy O'Donovan. O'Donovan now knocks in the early cross. O'Flynn finds the net with a lovely angled header. And John O'Flynn back in the team this evening. Scores his 11th goal of the season. 18 minutes gone. Cork City 1, Derry City 0. George goes forward on the run now, trying to get something for himself in terms of a score, but he lays it off. There's the whistle. Cork City are the League of Ireland champions, Premier Division, and nobody can argue.
And nobody but nobody can argue, although James O'Toole, while that was playing, because he's a Derry City fan, was having a bit of a fit.
What a mental night that was, actually, because I remember speaking to Damien Richardson after it, and obviously the goal goes in early, John O'Flynn goes in early, and Cork kind of boss it for the next 15 minutes and then just kind of go, come at us and try and have a go. It was last night at the Shed. The atmosphere in the ground was absolutely phenomenal. It was about 1,000 people travelled down from Derry for the match as well. It was actually the same day Roy Keane had quit Man United. There was so much happening in football that day. And then...
Was that the same day?
Exact same day. Wow. It was lunchtime that day.
That seems like only yesterday.
Yeah, lunchtime that day is when it broke, because we were on the train down from Dublin for the match. And yeah, what a night. Great night for Cork.
A great night for George O'Callaghan, wasn't it, George? Well,
yeah, it was an amazing night, because I actually remember the season before Shells won the league and they had about 1,500 at the game. And I remember saying to the lads in the
changing room... You mean Alan Cawley won the league with Shells?
Come on, yeah. Don't start slagging off us winning the league now in 2004.
So anyway... But I remember, and I said to the lads in the changing room, I goes, we'll win this league next year and we'll have 1,500 waiting to outside Turner's Cross to get in. And that's how that night panned out. It was an amazing night. We shouldn't have been in that situation, because we're such a good team, you know. We just barely got over the line to win the league, and Derry were very unfortunate. But that was just such a great night, because what I remember most is that after the game, everyone came in the pitch and I went into the changing room. And that season, like, I was after doing everything possible I could to win that league, and the lads lifted the trophy without me, and I was in the changing room and I was like, how are they actually lifting the trophy without me? And I tried to get out with the lads. So if you ever see the pictures, I'm in none of the pictures with the lads lifting the trophy. So I went up to Dan Murray and I said, oh, Dan, I goes, can I bring the cup down to the shed? Because I goes, I told Lennox I was going to bring the cup down to the shed when we won the league. And Muzza gave me the trophy and I brought it down to the shed. So, and it's kind of like an iconic thing that we brought the trophy down to the shed that night. But that was me just being a bit like, like I was proper, like not happy with the lads lifting the trophy. I was like, right, I'm taking it down to the shed myself. So this is the way. So, yeah, but it was a great night. And it was a great team as well. I mean, you look back and that, you know, and you got to remember we lost Doyler and Shane Long in the, like after 7 or 8 games in that season as well. You know, so
that's the thing that sticks out for me, George, is just how good that team was. Yeah. Like obviously we were going toe to toe with them at the time, and there was 3 or 4 or 5 really good full time teams around the time. Drogheda obviously were full time. Derry as well were going really well. Cork ourselves, but you had O'Flynn, Gamble, George. Like it was a really, really, like when you go back through the years of League of Ireland teams, that's right up there as one of the best.
I spoke to Pat Dolan once, and I was asking a lot of
former
managers, Pat Fenlon among them, who was the best ever League of Ireland team they saw. I think Fenlon would have plumped for the Rovers 80s team. Now Pat Dolan, now I appreciate he may be slightly biased here given that he was manager of that team prior to Richardson, but he insisted that the Cork 05 team, or that team 04-05, was the best League of Ireland team ever constructed.
Better than the Shells team of 2004.
Well, I mean,
it was good teams around, but in fairness, yeah.
And it was a very high quality era, really, for the
It was.
I think the thing with it was we had so many Cork lads, and I kind of suppose we had that mentality that, like, we didn't care how much money we were on. We just wanted to beat Shells and beat Bows and kind of break that kind of dominance that they had up in Dublin. And we literally lived for that, the whole lot of us, because, like, and when I look at the team, like, we didn't care what happened. Like, I just love going up, like, against Shells and all the boys in these big games. And, like, I think Shells kind of, like, made us all better down in Cork, because we knew we had to be like them. And we had 2 or 3 years where they used to bully us in games, and Pat used to go crazy. And we kind of learnt the way then of being a bit more streetwise in the League of Ireland. And I think as soon as we won that league, kind of Shells kind of faded away after that, you know, maybe 1 or 2 years later. But for us, was beating Shells and beating Bows and all these teams. And, like, it was something that I'll never forget. We just get on the bus up to Dublin, just like, we used to hate every single one of the Shells players. You see in the tunnel, like, we just wanted to fight them. Mm. And it's something that you don't really see anymore. And I used to be disgusted. And I'm like, right, lads, we know what we got to do today, you know. And looking back, it was great crack, you know what I mean? It was brilliant, like, as a player, just to have that, like, buzzing feeling going on to pitches against guys.
It was a mental day that day, if you think about it. When was the last time we went down to the last game of the season? Yeah. The two teams played against each other, and it was winner take all. No Cork and Dundalk a couple of years ago, but that was the second last game of the season, wasn't it? Was it the last game, maybe?
It was just crazy getting into that situation.
Like,
and it was genuine needle as well, and you need that. Like, we're on about Cork and Dundalk in recent years, the rivalry. You need that, like, you know, it's kind of being created now with Shamrock Rovers and Dundalk, I think. But certainly going back to our time, there was genuine need. Like, the Cork George's team, even though we respected them as players, nobody liked them and they didn't like us. But that's a good thing. Like, I don't think that's bad at all, you know?
Yeah, well, we mentioned Keane as, like, United and Arsenal in days of yore.
Yeah, days. You respect your opponents, Adrian. We all know they're good players. That's why they're obviously at the top of the table, vying for league titles and different things. But nobody likes them. Like, And that's the way it should be. Like, and you look at modern day football now, them hugging and kissing and all. And I don't want to sound like some sort of old fogey, but that seems to be gone out of it a little bit now. But I think in our league, it's certainly been created at the moment with Shamrock Rovers and Dundalk, which is a good thing because they don't like each other.
Do you remember when one of my favourite times in that we beat you 2-0 up in Talca, and Roy O'Donovan was only a young kid. And Roy was kind of like, you kind of buy into all that we were doing, like, and he scored a great header and he ran past Harry, and Harry was actually getting player of the year before, and he goes, player in the air, me. And then, you know what, we were all celebrating. I couldn't stop laughing, and I was like, there you go now. But, you know, and Harry's a fantastic player, like, and I don't know the guy, but he was, you know,
he's a great lad,
like, that's
well.
It like, you, as you say, you kind of grew up that we were just like enemies, you know what I mean? But it was just so funny and I'll never forget it.
Just how good, George, was that team?
It was an amazing team. Do you know what? I think, like, Pat built that team, you know. Like, I know Rico was the manager, but Pat built that team from scratch. We kind of had a 3-year project to win the league, and that's what happened. But I think if we were actually drilled more and shaped, we just went out and played. We just played 7 sides every day at training. We never done set pieces. We never did nothing. We never worried about the other team. We just basically went out and played. So we just played off the cuff, the whole lot of us. I think if you had someone, and I'm not slagging Rico off, because, I am slagging him off. But, do you know what? If you had somebody, a good coach, like, I think Rico was a good man and manager. He was a brilliant man and manager. But if he had a good coach in there that kind of, like, set us up, we would have done a lot better in Europe. And, you know, I think things would, we would have easily like won that league by 10 or 15 points. But in the way it was, the way we trained and the way it was, we just basically, we didn't get out to our full potential anyway. I certainly think that.
So what was the big difference between Pat and Rico?
Pat used to sit outside my house in his car. Before
the of course.
I used to be looking out the curtains going, will he ever go home?
It's 3 a.m.
Yeah, he used to that.
Well, you used to hear all the stories, didn't you? And like I hear, the famous one I heard was when he opened up the phone book and just said, pick out a random number. This is when there was phone books. Is there even phone books nowadays?
Oh, yeah, you're all foggy, yeah.
Picked out the phone book and he just says in the office, he says, ring that number. So he rings the number and whoever it is, Mrs. Brennan answers or whatever, and he says, hello, Mrs. Brennan, this is Pat Allen in Cork City. Who does your son support? And he's like, oh, my son loves Man United. Why does he love Man United? Get him down to the Revel Army. Brilliant. And there was all this kind of stuff.
Pat Dolan, I met him once in Strokestown Road. I hate to bring it back to Longford Town again, but they were playing at Lone in a League Cup game, and I was about 10 and my mate and I went up to him. We recognised him off the telly back then. I think Pat's might have won the league that year with him in charge, and
controversial.
He asked us who we supported, and my friend said Manchester United. He held out a pound in front of him and he said, who do you support? And my friend said Manchester United. And Dolan, he went out to reach for the pound, and Dolan held it away from him, and then held it. Who'd you support? And he looked bemused. Who'd you support? He said again, and then I cottoned on and said Longford Town, and then he handed me the pound.
Hey, yes.
And he let you. He didn't give your man a pound. He didn't give the other 10-year-old.
He expensed that though.
But again, going back to characters and things like that, and George will tell you, like he was brilliant for the league, Pat. Like in terms of talking it up and bigging it up and bigging up players and all. Like you would miss him in the league, and even that time. I know we're talking about those great teams. There was great managers as well. Like Pat was obviously managing Shells. You had Paul Doolin, Richardson, Pat Dolan. Like great managers as well. And I still think there's a major place for those fellas still in the league here. Like,
in fairness, the spirit of Pat Dolan stayed around Cork for a number of years. Mm-hmm. As a certain defender, I used to don the suit and go out into the middle of the pitch. And
Greg.
It's my brother-in-law.
Greg was probably the best Pat Dolan impersonator in the world.
Can you imagine my mother-in-law when me and Greg walks into the house?
And George, just like in Pat, obviously would have played a big part in I suppose viewing in Cork City, but just how much of an influence was he on you? Because we do hear the stories that you were like a bit of a eccentric character and you like to enjoy yourself and all, but like on a serious note, like just how important was he for you?
Pat saved my career, to be honest, like, and I'll always be grateful for that. I suppose when I came back from England, I kind of felt that was it, and I kind of like played the way I lived my lifestyle. Like I just didn't care. Like if things worked, they worked, and if they didn't, they didn't. So, and I used to kind of get away with murder with all the managers because I suppose they used to look at me like to kind of have that little bit extra that the other players didn't have. But I remember I got caught drink driving and I got assault charges, and Pat came to my house and he just picked me up and he brought me up, because the last game of the season against Bohemians in 2004, he brought me up and put me in into Ashery to a treatment centre. He was like, you have to go fix your head and clear your head and get yourself sorted. So, and after that, then when I went there, Pat and myself always had a bond. Pat would come see me on a Wednesday and he's like, right, get yourself ready for the new season. So that season in 2005, Pat looked after me the whole time, even though Rico was after coming in as the manager. So I would basically just listen to Pat all the time. And even after that, it would be always Pat's calls, making sure I was all right, back, everyone was normal and looking after myself. So for what Pat did to me, I'll never forget it. And, you know, people don't realise what a great heart Pat has and what a great guy he is, you know. And as I say, like, I'll never forget what he did for me and give me a hand to start my career. Because after that, you know, I was able to go back to England a couple of more times and do my stuff. And So do you know what? It was an eye opener, and he looked after me. You know, I should have easily been sacked 3 or 4 times in Cork City, but the lads always looked after me and that. So it was great, and that's what I have, the support down in Cork that I always had, which was fantastic.
And do you still keep in touch with Pat?
I do. Yeah, I'm the only person that can do his head in that Pat Dolan will hang the phone up. So he's not able for me. I just give him to me because I don't take none of his BS. Like I goes, Pat, listen, I'm not listening to this tonight, just go away. I've got enough of my plate of 2 kids at home waiting for their dinner.
And come here, in terms of your career, we obviously Cork, I presume Cork and 2005 was probably the highlight, but you don't necessarily come from a football background. Hurling was more your game growing up.
Yes, oh, my family are all hurlers, like my brother and all that, and the parish I come from is big hurling in Whitechurch, you know, so, and I ended up playing for the Glen Rovers. So when I was younger then, I played in the Hartley teams with Sean Ogan and Kevin Egan and these guys. So so when I left, when I was 15, I went away to Porfail, and when I came back when I was 22, I picked up a hurley again, and within a month I was in the Cork Intermediate team, and then I was in for the Championship. But Liam Murphy wouldn't let me play because he said he wasn't going to pay me my wages if I togged out for the GA. So hurling's a big part of my life. It still is, you know. I still go to all the games.
Any regrets that you didn't get a crack with the Cork hurlers on a more serious level, given that you were that close to lining out?
I suppose a little bit, you know, because I see the lads around, you know, they're all around the parish. And Barry Egan, who was an all-star, is in our parish, and Mickey Mullins that won the final in 1990 in the double. So a little bit of me, but you know what, I loved my soccer career. I had a great time, and soccer, I suppose, I don't know where it came from, just became my first love. So I do love the hurling and love going to watch it, but I don't know if I could have taken any more of those flakes that the lads are getting these days anyway. I'm better off playing the soccer, I think.
And 15, that was very young going over to Port Vale. What was that like for you?
Yeah, I was very young, you know, and especially coming from where I came from, because, you know, I just come from like a country village, and I suppose going over to England and dealing with, like, and I suppose Alan would tell you know, you're dealing with the English lads, and I was so skinny and the whole lot. So you kind of get used to that. I suppose in the environment back then, there would have been a lot of, I suppose, bullying and all that in the changing room, which lads could get away with. So what I learned is that I just had to train harder, have a better touch than everyone. So if they slag me off, I go, at least I can control the ball. You can't. So I kind of got that cheekiness out of my way just to protect myself. And I think I always had that through the rest of my career, even though sometimes I should have just kept my mouth shut. But I think it was really difficult. I had no family. We used to have to go down to the phone box to ring home. You know, it wasn't like you can Skype nor FaceTime or any of that anymore at them days, you know. So it was difficult. But do you know what? I suppose when looking back, I just had no guidance, you know. I kind of went in and done my stuff, and I think later on when I got to 21 to the 22, it more affected me than it was when I was 15 to 18.
And were you in group digs there, or were you just out by your own, or how were the club looking after you at that age, and was there even, like, was your education catered for at all, or was it just you were now a footballer?
No, the club basically had, I think, you know, 18, 19 YTS players. Mm. We were basically full-time cleaners. So I think that's when I look back on it, because half the players weren't good enough to make it. I think I was the only one that came through the whole batch. You know, at the weekends, the games would finish, and if the first team weren't at home, you'd basically come home half one on a Saturday, and that's it. You don't see nobody till Monday. I'd be living in digs then on my own, because all the other lads would head back then, you know, into Birmingham or Wolverhampton, where they're from. So that was difficult. You know, I was lucky. Like, a couple of families would probably feel sorry for me and take me back and bring me to a Villa game or a Birmingham game at the weekends every now and again. But back then, there was no structure whatsoever. You know, we were just there and we're there. And I look back on that, and especially my youth team manager, Mark Grew, I often think, you know, like, he should have seen my time at the end, when it was come to the end of Porfield. He should have seen it with me, because I was with him for so long. It's not his fault, because ultimately I'm responsible for my own actions. But I do think that structure was craziness for young kids, especially going over at that age.
And you mentioned a few moments ago, George, bullying. Was that serious bullying?
Well, do you know what? I think with the lads, you just have to deal with it. It was just the way it was. I think you knew other choice back then. You know, like, if you didn't do the pros football teams or football boots right, you could end up in one of the skips, locked in a skip for half an hour. You know, stuff like this. And like, I suppose when we look back, or at the time, lads probably just found it funny, but I do see a lot of lads that I meet up, say, I'm going to go watch the Irish Legends or play with the Irish Legend lads, and you see a lot of lads who are kind of like, some of them like still mentally tortured from it. Like, I'm kind of lucky that I kind of just let it all go, but I do think back then, days were completely different to what they are now and what kids have now. I see how, like, I've been over at Ipswich's Academy and Norwich's and Villa's and the guidance and support that they have. But back then, it was just accepted, and that was just the way it was.
Was that your experience, Alan, when you were in England?
That was just the environment, and you just had to either get on with it, or else you would be left as kind of the outcast. I remember some of the initiation things we had to do when I lived in the Leeds digs. There was first years and second years, and all the first years, basically, we were brought out on a Sunday afternoon. I'll never forget it. And basically, it was like a Royal Rumble out in the, because as George said, everybody used to go home. So the place was empty on the weekends. Whoever was left staying in the digs, that was it. And we were all stripped naked out onto the pitch, and you had to run up the pitch into the centre circle and all kind of fight and wrestle like a Royal Rumble type thing, and the last man standing. And this was all made a joke of, made fun of. But as George said, what people don't realise is, I suppose, the impact it has on people in later years or even at the time.
But so at the time when that happened, how did you feel? I mean, presumably the thinking is, oh, this will toughen you up and this will harden
kind of thing,
you up, and it's bonding of a kind. But perhaps if you're...
Yeah, and like George, I was coming from a small town in Sligo, obviously going over as well, and going into the big bad world, and you just kind of have to get on with it or else you're cast aside. And I think if you weren't to get on with it, they'd even take more advantage of you if they see how vulnerable you might be, you know, if you were to kind of start kind of rebelling against the type thing. So everyone just rolled in. Now, there was one or two that did kind of say, no, I'm not having this, but... It would make things even tougher for them. That was just the industry, Adrian, in terms of the dressing room behaviour and all. And like George says, that's all gone now, and thankfully it's all gone now, because you look at young fellas now. Now, I do think, I'm not saying that was right, and I'm not saying the way it is now, but there is a balance to be met. Sometimes I think nowadays they're nearly too soft, or they're too kind of get too much given to them. George said there that they were almost like full-time cleaners. I had no problem with cleaning boots or doing your jobs or whatever you had to do. I think in some ways that shapes you and gives you an incentive to work hard and to get on. But you can't go from one extreme to the other. I think there's a balance to be met, but some of that stuff that we were doing in terms of the initiation was just ludicrous.
This is gonna be something that probably nobody thought they were ever gonna hear on an RTÉ Soccer podcast, but down to Bronfen Bremer's attachment theory being the cause and solution of all everybody's problems. How you leave your parents and your small village and go to the UK and be treated like that, it's no wonder people come back with problems. Like, do you know what I mean? Have you just survived it, or have you ignored what you survived and it'll eventually come back
to you? Because that just happened. That was like almost seen as a one-off type thing at the start of a year or start of a season. And then there's 90% of the time is great. Like, don't get me wrong. Brilliant times. But there is those aspects. And that's something that I suppose people don't talk about or discuss. But that's the experience I had. I'll never forget that day, that Sunday afternoon running up the pitch. It was unbelievable.
I don't know, Al, is it? But for me, I think it was... If your parents rang, it would be, no, everything's great, everything's fine. Like, you know, you could be dying inside. But I suppose you're going over there to be a footballer. Your whole life's dream is about being a footballer. So you don't want to rock the boat because you're not in a situation to rock the boat. So you just do what you're told to do because you're so desperate to be a footballer. And like that's just the way it was. And I think you end up hiding everything from everyone. So like you just become the best bluffer ever on the phone or to people. And that's the environment that you had to be in. You just like, no matter what way it was, any day or a match day, you just have to get through it and do what you have to do.
And that was George as well. Like, that's your story, poor fail. My story leads. If you speak to every young fella, that was going on up and down the country. That was the culture. That was just the environment. As I said, things have changed now in the world we live in now. You just wouldn't get away with that kind of stuff, which is obviously a good thing. Yeah, that was just the way it was, James, yeah.
Because it's obviously the parents and stuff like that, people come in and they sell you the world for these kids to go over and play in these clubs and what have you. And I'm sure it was the same with you at Leeds, George, with Port Vale. Like, parents told, no, this is what it's like, this way it's going to be. And then a completely other, different life happening.
Yeah, and like, we were treated like the best in the world, like the best of treatment, but that Sunday when everyone went home and the second years got a hold of us, it was just a case
of like boarding school. Sounds like some of the horrific like that, case stories you hear from boarding school.
At the weekend when everyone's gone and it's just you're left there or whatever, that's when those kind of things, whatever, would happen.
I think, you know, some people, when you're in the YTS and you see kids go home from England and they go home because they just can't deal with it. I think, say, for myself, I kind of put a thing into me that I had to survive. I knew how to survive. And I think that's how I like prolonged my career so long, is because you kind of get that element where you know how to dodge the bullets, or you know what to do. And, you know, if you're struggling some days and match days, you know what I mean? That kind of bit comes out of it as you're used to protecting yourself, you know? And
One thing, yeah, George, even with me, it makes you mature so much quicker. And I suffered the first year. I was a disaster. I was home every second or third week, homesickness. Like, it was a waste of a year because I was going home every... And the club couldn't do enough. But it came to the point where I was packing the bags and saying, I've had enough of this. I'm going home. I just can't cope. And I remember packing the bags and booking a flight with the lads one of the nights in the digs. And I rang my dad and he says, look, that's fine, you're coming home, absolutely no problem, we'll support you, whatever you want to do, but please don't just walk out, the club have been so good to you, just sleep on it, wake up in the morning, go down and tell them. And that's what I did. And I went home for, told him in the morning, and the club says, look, go home, but you need to make a decision now. You're either going home for good or take as long as you want and come back. But if you come back, you're coming back to be a footballer. And it was 3 weeks, I think, I took and came back. And that was it. I just got on with it then. But it does, like, where I suffered at 16, you go back then, you have to mature and grow up so much quicker then. Like, I was, my friends at 16, 17 back home, I know for a fact I would have been so much more mature than all of them because of the experience I was having, being thrown out into the big bad world compared to what they were. Now, whether that's right or wrong, I don't know. But you just, that's the reality of it. As George says, you become thick-skinned. You just have to survive and get on with it. And that's not to say it was bad. Like we weren't treated. Yeah, no. Like, there was good stuff and all that kind of. There was good things and lads were great. Some of the best friends. You've great times. All that stuff. But you just sink or swim.
It would bear in mind whether you is a liaison officer a good thing for these kids who go abroad. Is it like an Irish liaison officer where you know all these kids who are in different academies and what have you, and you can sit down with them or whatever once a month or whatever and say, how's things going?
That's where we have an outlet.
To.
Yeah, and that's where, and I'm sure George was the exact same where George was coming from, and he said it, you mentioned it earlier, he had no guidance. My mum and dad were just doing the best they could for me as a mum and dad, like any mum and dad, no matter what job their young fellas are doing or kids are doing. But my mum and dad had no one to go and speak to say, look, Adrian, what do you think of this? Or is this the right thing to do? Or he's been told to do this. So we were just fending for ourselves type thing and just trying to support them as best you can. So
wasn't that a role that Owen Hand had?
Doing something like that. Yes. And definitely, I don't know as to why that stopped, but there's definitely a place for somebody like that for young. Because the amount of lads, Leeds was full of Irish lads at the time. But when four or five of us left or came home, I know three or four of them that packed it in didn't even play football.
Yeah, that's it.
I don't mean to be bleak
It's a different side to the business that is football, and it's part of the business that people don't see.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, and we done a discussion last week with one of the parents, Connor Masterson's mum, and on the radio there, and it was really beneficial. Jason Knight's dad as well. That stuff was good because people only see the cars, the money, and the fame, and all that. Nonsense. They don't see the tears and the crying and the running up the pitch on a Sunday afternoon.
It's really stuck with you, as you said. You say all the good things, but there's obviously something there. And same with you, George. Like, as you saying, there was certain stuff you got away with clubs because you were just that little bit better. And would that have been stuff that, if these kind of memories hadn't been there or the way you were treating Port Vale, maybe that wouldn't have happened at all. You would have just concentrated on your football.
Yeah, well, I think so. I think like I had a really bad ending to my career in Port Vale, and I think I never got over it. And the thing about in England, and I found that as I went along, and people in England don't forget. For instance, I went to Brighton on loan, and the chairman, I didn't speak out with the chairman. I just said a few lads' contracts were out on Boxing Day over in England. And I said, listen, don't worry about me. The chairman should look after the younger lads, which I shouldn't have said. It was none of my business. But he rang Ipswich and said, like, oh, George was pissed in the changing room on Boxing Day and, like, have him back. So then I got sent back to Ipswich and I didn't know he was after saying this. And then Jim McGilton, you say to me every morning, good Christmas, George. And I was like, yeah, I had a great Christmas, you know. And then I realised after about 2 weeks, I went to see Jim McGilton. I said, listen, like, Jim, like, what's the crack? Like, I goes, like, you keep saying this to me. And I goes, nobody's coming in for me. Like, and he goes, you know why? He goes, you were pissed in Boxing Day at Millwall. And I said to him, I literally will never play soccer again. I goes, ring Dean Wilkins, or I goes, I'm never playing football ever again. I goes, I'll retire right now. I goes, because I don't care. And he rang Dean Wilkins, and Dean Wilkins goes, no. He goes, like, the chairman just made that story up. He goes, I couldn't protect George because I'm going to lose my own job anyway. So I just got hung out. And that day, I just said to Jim, I goes, I'm sick of it. I goes, I'm going home. I goes, I'm going back to Cork. I goes, I can't be arsed with this anymore. So, like, it's always that kind of way in England, and it always seemed to come back and haunt me constantly. And by the end of it, my brain was just burnt out from it. I just had enough. I couldn't wait to retire and get away from the whole lot of it.
Oh, really, yeah?
Yeah, I knew at 28, 29, I was like, I'm finished. I used to say to the family, I goes, I don't want to play.
You just had enough.
Yeah, and I journeymaned around the place then, you know, I had like 3 months Dundalk, 3 months Waterford, but I knew I was finished in my heart and I was just going just to pick up the wages, you know, which was a terrible way to be for those clubs and I shouldn't behave that way. But I was just, my brain was just so fried from everyone that I just couldn't wait to get away from the whole lot.
And tell us how you ended up in Malaysia.
Oh, gee.
sounds like how long have you got?
Yeah, so I ended up finishing my career with the Crown Prince of Brunei because I wanted to go like and live in the sun anyway, so I brought all the family out. But when I finished, I sent them an email and said, listen, I think you're getting ripped off by agents and the players aren't good enough. Can I have a good chance to look after your team? So he brought me out and I brought in the five foreigners and I actually brought Joey Gamble and Roy O'Donovan out there. And they won the league, so that kind of went really well. And then as I was in Singapore, I met Morgan Stanley Bank and they gave me a job working with one of their clients that was interested in buying a championship team. And while I was working for Morgan Stanley, the boss of Saba came over and we met for dinner and they offered me the job to come in and be the general manager of Saba, which is like there's 4.5 million people in the city. Like, you get like about 35,000. Like, our first home game, we 35,000. So I was going in as general manager and to bring in a manager, but I couldn't find a manager anywhere. So I ended up being a team manager and I brought Liam Kearney over as my assistant. But it was craziness. It was craziness.
Is Dave Rogers not over there that stage?
He's avoiding his calls.
Of all the people I would have played with or against Georgie, I never ever, you know when people say, who would you have down as management material? Yeah.
And I was 35, you know, and sure, I was only over there for the holiday. And I said to Kearney, I goes, Kearney, come over, we'll have great crack. Like, I goes, like, it's 35 degrees, I'm living on the beach. Like, I goes, you won't believe this. And so we used to like go training, like, sure, we used to be cutting training short to go home for happy hour. Like, but it was an amazing thing. Like, when I look back, like, I knew it was going to last because nothing lasts in Asia.
And you signed El Hadj Diouf, isn't that right? The former Liverpool.
Yeah, that's my biggest regret in my life, meeting him.
Go on.
Clive Clark said to me, he met him in a nightclub, I should have known it. And he said he'd be sounding, come over, he'll do the job for you. So them guys are normally getting 20 or 30,000 a month, but I got him for 7,000 a month. So I was like, what? Worst case scenario is like, I just get rid of him. But like, I think he kind of came to us like in a really bad situation, I think financially. And all he did was hustle and cause havoc and just exactly the way because I thought to myself, you know, like, people would have an opinion of me and maybe I can deal with them, like, and I kind of know the crack, but there's no dealing with this guy. Like, it was just way too difficult, you know. I couldn't deal with him whatsoever. Couldn't. Yeah. Don't get me started, boys. Don't get me.
And you still wouldn't take Dave Rogers' his phone call. Like,
I should have taken Roger instead of him.
So the management career, George, is that it done and dusted now?
No, I'd say I'll definitely be looking. Somebody in Malaysia will be looking for me again soon.
Maybe back to Tralee Dynamos.
I love doing the management, but it was just the wrong time. I was too young and I was only 35 and I actually couldn't deal with the pressure because I had 11 DACOs, which are SIRs. They were all doing it for the votes and they're all politics and they were bringing me out for dinner every night and I just couldn't cope with the whole like stress of everyone at me every day, you know. So that's what really annoys me about that is that I got to the stage where I met him and we were winning and one of the DACOs came in and said, listen, I'm going to be team manager now. You don't need to be team manager because you're winning. And I was like, so you're taking over team manager now and you're going to pick the team and all that. And he's like, yeah. And I goes, fine. Well, I goes, I'm not doing this anymore. So that kind of went down for 2 or 3 weeks. And then I met him one day and we were playing in a way and he said, I'll take the team tonight. And I said, fine. He goes, you stay here. And I said, grand. I goes, I won't be here in the morning. So I just went home and got like the wife and kids and we got on a flight and we flew home. But basically then all the Irish media kind of went all as if I was out in the lash for a week with I had a lad from Singapore playing for me who was a Muslim kid. It looked like me and him went on the lash for a week. Like, you know what I mean? It was crazy. So that's why I kind of hid away then for years because I was just so sick and tired of it. I was like, what can I do? Like, sure, I'm just getting slagged everything I do. So, and that really annoyed me, like the sloppy journalists that were like doing the websites and on the papers there. So that was one thing that really annoyed me when I left Saba. But listen, it was an experience. Who says, like, you know, managing the Premier League in Malaysia was good fun. So, but.
And you're back in Cork now. What are you up to these days?
Well, I'm involved. We have a 24-hour gym opening up now called Anytime Fitness in Ballincollig. So, you know, I really enjoy the fitness of, you know, and you're doing a job like where you're making people healthier and, you know, helping people, you know, come out and clear their minds. So it's a job I really been looking to do for years, and I'm just so lucky that I'm involved with such a good company with the Aura Group, and they give me a chance like to be general manager of the gym, and I'm doing a lot of media stuff down in Cork as well. So I love doing the media, even though my family to be worried what's going to come out of me next. But
I don't know why. Can't imagine why they'd be worried.
But I do, you know, and I'm really looking forward now doing the gym, you know, getting to the gym and doing an hour in the morning and helping out everybody. And, you know, just going to watch my little boy play now is great. And you never know, I still do a little bit of the football coaching. But at the minute, really, it's just going to be with the gym and the media.
Well, good luck with it. And listen, thanks a million for joining us on the RTÉ Soccer Podcast.
No, thank
George O'Callaghan. Thanks a million.
Cheers, guys.
There you go. That's the legend that is George O'Callaghan, formerly of Cork City and various other clubs. Let's go back to hits and misses. In fact, before we do, I'll just run through the results from the First Division at the weekend. A very good start for Cabinteely, 4-2 winners over Bray Wanderers. The Galway Athlone game postponed. Eamon DC Park was waterlogged. Wexford 1, UCD 1, Cove Ramblers 0, Drogheda United 2, Chris Lyons and a Sean Brennan penalty. And a very good start for Longford Town against Shamrock Rovers. Longford winning by 2-0, Connor Durbin. Yeah. And Rob Manley, the new signing, getting off the mark. But hang on a second. James has a problem with Longford Town and with Drogheda United in his miss of the week.
Yeah, my miss of the week is, the only way it can be described is petulance from the First Division. Absolute petulance.
Explain.
Well, Shamrock Rovers 2 were in. Obviously, the FEI took the decision, put them in the league. On a different show, I spoke to the chairman of Drogheda United a couple of weeks ago, who told me that they had no problem, particularly with Shamrock Rovers, but with any team going in, there's no problem really with it being Shamrock Rovers. They were any kind of second team going into the league, they weren't going to be happy with. But they're there now. To call them the development team and talk to them as the development team, put your results up as development team, they're called Shamrock Rovers.
This was on Twitter and social media.
So I don't know whether something from, I don't know whether this wire is crossed here or anything like that. It really annoyed me at the weekend that this kind of thing was happening. These are young lads who are coming up, under 21s, they're allowed to play two other teams. They're there in the league. They're going to play in the league. At least show them some form of respect and call them Shamrock Rovers too. Don't call them development team. Don't leave them off your match programme. Don't anything like that. It just really, really bugs me. And where we've gone through so much bad news about the football in Ireland, the season started, let's get off to a good start. You bet them 2-0. But don't put up on your match report, Longford Town 2, development team 0. That's just petulant in the way I'm looking at it.
Okay, that's your opinion. Your hit of the week, James?
My hit of the week, I'm going to give it to Gary Deegan.
I hear you, Robin. All your hits and misses.
Sorry, Deegan.
You the same miss as well.
And wait till you hear what I have to say about it.
Sorry, can we ring legal office, please? Yeah,
Deegan, I think Deegan's hit for Shells against Dundalk was absolutely smashing. Top corner. Gary Rogers, who is a very, very good goalkeeper, just had to watch it go past him. And I think that second half performance by Shelburne against Dundalk show how good they were. Dundalk had to bring on more defenders. Substituting more defenders. That's how much pressure they're under. And it's great to see Diego back playing really, really good. Great to see Gary Deegan back after time in the UK. I loved him when he was at Southend, by the way. Loved him there.
Connor, your hits and misses?
My hit, I go cross-channel for the hit. Obviously, Enda Stevens scored a fantastic goal, but I'm going to give it to Shane Long, who scored with his midriff, I think we might put it delicately. Yeah, there was talk of Long was talking to the Southampton website last week about the blow. How it was a killer blow to be left out of the Ireland squad, but it had been the first time it had happened since he was ever fully fit and available for selection. But the word is now, and there are sort of murmurs and hints that he is going to be back in the frame come March in Slovakia. My miss of the week, I suppose I'll stick on the same theme as what James is talking about. I mean, I obviously have no problem with the way Longford Town behaved at all this week. Drogheda United in that graphic that you're talking about where they unveiled the fixtures and referred to Longford Town v development team, they did put down City Calling Stadium, which is no longer the ground there. It's Bishopsgate. So, yeah. I mean, it's you know, as miss of the weeks go, it's not the most seismic, but there you are. I did note during the week that prominent Galway United supporter Ronan Coleman, I think on Twitter, said that before the Longford Town Shamrock Rovers game, and obviously Galway United, part of the First Division Alliance, they're hostile to Rovers. And he said something about, tonight we are all from Longford, to which the only sensible reply is, they wish.
Now, Alan, after all that, have you got any hits and misses that haven't been used up?
No, well, yeah, I'm kind of copying you all, really. The Burke one was probably my hit. Because any player that scores 5 goals in any league or any match, it's a hell of an achievement, and to do it at that level. So Graham Burke, also Deegan, was a great goal, a great strike, and Shelburne did play very well by all accounts, particularly in the second half. And so far Dundalk, the 3 goals they've scored in the league have all been from set pieces. They haven't scored from open play yet, which is an interesting stat, but I'd say that could change at home to Cork City tonight. but yeah, I on a serious note, I would be with James totally on the whole pettiness. And that's the only word you can call it, really, Adrian, of the Twitter handles of Drogheda and Longford. Like, we're trying to, there's a lot of talk in the, at the moment about Irish football and the changing and improving and all that kind of stuff. And honestly, it's like kids in the playground. Like, they released a statement last week, the First Division Alliance, and it was a very well-worded statement, and they gave their reasons, and that's fine. That should be it, put to bed then. And they said it'll be reviewed again in 6 months, and they were happy with that. But once they're coming out saying we're going to play now under protest, and as James says, the team sheets are coming out with development team, and they're giving the scores development team. If anything, it takes away from Drogheda United and Longford. It looks horrendous, especially online. And I know Conor very well, the Drogheda chairman, Conor Hoy, and a very decent man, a very decent fellow, well-respected man. And I think he should be above that, really. I would have thought he would have been above that, but it's a complete nonsense, and it takes away from whatever kind of reasons they have, and valid they may be in their mind. It just takes away all that kind of from it by the pettiness of releasing those kind of things online, and it was a major irk of mine when I saw it online.
Okay. Longford Town tweeted today actually that they're looking forward to playing Drogheda this weekend in their first big test of the season, which is a rare bit of editorialising from the Twitter account.
Like that stuff, like, you know, and I know social media is so prevalent now, and the Twitter handles, and we've commented, you said last week, James, about the videos and the great work that's been done on social media by all the clubs and all the accounts. But that stuff is like as if it's a 6-year-old that's doing that account.
Pettiness is part of being a fan, though, isn't it?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, but that, fair enough, it's part of being a fan. These aren't fans, they're official club Twitter accounts. Now, I'm not saying that Connor's the one pushing this out, by the way.
No.
Is there a lack of communication between Conor and the media team at Drogheda United that are doing this?
Okay, well, hopefully
that's where I would say
it'll all be clarified in due course. Big, big game on Friday night, Alan. It's live on RT2 television. Shamrock Rovers against Dundalk.
Massive.
Just a few games in and already.
Massive. This is it. This
it's
is
a title decider.
Well, no, it is. It's a huge game. It's the fixture of the season, obviously. The two best teams, and really are the two best teams, head and shoulders above everyone. And I think come the end of the season, you're going to see a massive points gap again between the second and third place. They're just so far ahead of everyone else. Obviously, we watched Derry on Friday, who finished fourth. I've watched Bohemian so far, and these two teams are just so far ahead of the rest of them. Tough one to call. I think the fact that it's the first game of that they've met so far in the season, it's probably going to be a cagey enough affair. But I think the news that Shamrock Rovers have brought in Gaffney is a big, big statement from them. It was needed as well. I know we were critical before the goalkeeper situation, and I felt as though Stephen, without going over old ground, he dillied and dallied, and the difference when he brought in Manus, then this could be something similar, bringing in Gaffney. It could be the final piece of the jigsaw. They're a very good team, obviously, but Dundalk are a very good team as well, and I'm just looking forward to the game.
Yeah, Cork take on Finn Harps at Turner's Cross. Derry City against Bulls. That should be tasty enough, James.
Yeah, it should be a good game. I actually, to go back to that one there, the Cork City versus Finn Harps, I think that might be a tester for Neil, I have to say, because tonight
that's
against
huge.
Dundalk, it comes up to Finn Harps, fourth game of the season.
And I have to say, I know we were speaking off air and we might, we're running out of time now, but Finn Harps, I was so impressed with them on Friday night, Adrian, obviously the live game. They've signed, they've recruited very, very well in the off season, and they've brought in footballers, good footballers as well, and it might be a different Finn Harps that we see this season in terms of the approach and the way to play. But certainly Barry McNamee, Ryan Connolly, Tony McNamee, they're all very, very good footballers, and they played really, really well in the Brandywell Friday night.
Yeah, and Shells against St. Pat's, that won't be bad either, one would imagine. Slugger Rovers against Waterford is on Saturday night in the First Division. Athlone against Cabinteely, Bray against Wexford. Longford taking on Drogheda at United Park.
First big test. UCD against Cove Ramblers. And then on Saturday, it's Shamrock Rovers. Do we call them Shamrock Rovers seconds or Shamrock Rovers two? We definitely don't call them the development team anyway.
I can't wait to hear them being called out on the Sky Sports, to tell you the truth.
Shamrock Rovers two.
Shamrock Rovers two, Brain Wanderers nil.
That's their title, isn't it? Shamrock Rovers two. Call them by that.
Yeah. Galway United's first game at Tallaght Stadium against Shamrock Rovers 2 at 3 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. Lads, listen, many thanks, and thanks as well once again to George O'Callaghan, Alan Cawley, Conor Neville, and also James O'Toole. Until the next time, bye bye.